Good morning. So we're at the last day of our session. And I'm still so very happy to be talking about Hakuin Song of Zazen and Tara Brach's rain practice. So I would like to just read the last section of the Song of Zazen that we'll be talking about today, and then I'll say more about it. Hakuin says, "Your form, being the form of no form, your going and returning takes place nowhere but where you are. Your thought, being the thought of no thought, your singing and dancing is none other than the voice of the Dharma. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi. How refreshingly bright the full moon of wisdom. At this moment, what is there that you lack? Nirvana is right here before our eyes. Where you stand is the land of purity. Your person, the body of the Buddha." So I'm just going to take this last section line by line and say something about it. So first there's your form being the form of no form. Your going and returning takes place nowhere but where you are. So this first part of the line, your form being the form of no form, is really the main teaching of the Diamond Sutra, which teaches that something is what it is only because of what it is not. So that, you know, for most logical people, at first, a sentence like that is very infuriating. What could it possibly mean? And it's interesting. I found a professor at Stanford University who's a translator and is working on a new translation of the Diamond Sutra. And his description of what it's about, I thought was very wonderful and accessible. So I just want to share that, a little bit of that. And I think this is mostly a paraphrase from him. So what this teaching is telling us is that there's no immovable core or soul of a person. It's not to say there is no soul, but there's no immovable core. There's no immovable soul. Instead, it's more fluid and relational. The view of existence is very fluid. And so here is the quote from him. "People assume they have selves. If that is the case, then change would be impossible, or it would be illusory. So if there was this immovable core or immovable soul, you would indeed be the same person that you were yesterday. You'd be the same person today as yesterday." And maybe that doesn't seem so bad when you're, you know, a fully grown up adult. But it would really be horrifying if souls or selves did not change, because then you would be stuck in the same place and be as you were when you were, say, 2 years old, which, if you think about it, is ridiculous. And, you know, your body didn't only change from when you were 2 years old, right? Yourself changed. So that is what this teaching is. And it also means that the form of you is made up of many non-you forms. And this is, I think, most beautifully described by Thich Nhat Hanh. When you see, like he often would say, the piece of paper. So it's a piece of paper, but it's not really a fixed form, because this piece of paper is made up of sunshine and rain and trees and earth and, you know, so many, many things. If it wasn't those things, it could not be a piece of paper. Those things have to be there. So all the non-paper elements are what makes this piece of paper possible. And, you know, it might be easy to think of with, easier to think of with a piece of paper than with ourselves. But, you know, you can think about how, what is yourself made up of? Your parents' DNA, what you had for breakfast, what someone said to you last week, and how that changed your mind in a certain way. So all of those things go into your form and make your form possible. And because of this, you're not stuck in one place. So this is the going and returning. And the going and returning might take place one certain place, the now. So like here, I think about Myoshin. She left Tokyoji to go home to be with her family and her cat who was dying. And then she returned. So there was a going and returning, kind of it looked like in one place, but it's really that one place is the now. It's the pivot point of this moment, and it's right where you are. So that's where, if your form is fluid, which it is, because it's the form of no form, then your going and returning takes place right here. So that brings it back to, it's not like nothing. It actually is a form, and it's happening, and it's taking place, and it can happen and take place right here in this moment, right where you are. And so, of course, that's happening whether, well, I shouldn't say of course, because maybe you don't think of course, but I will just say it is happening whether we believe it or not, whether we think about it or not. But it is possible to be open to it. And when we are open to that pivot point, to that fluid nature of our form, this is where compassion lives. So I was talking to someone yesterday a little bit about compassion and the difference between empathy and compassion. So, and Tara talks about this, about how empathy is feeling the emotions of others or taking their perspective. But if we stop there, if we're only in empathy, then we're stuck in a particular form. We're really stuck with like whatever is resonating with that other person. And Tara talks about how compassion begins with empathy. So it begins with that, really feeling the emotions of the other person, taking their perspective. But then it adds this crucial element of mindfulness. And so the mindfulness is being where we are. It protects us from merging or identifying with the pain. So when we have this mindfulness added to empathy, turning into compassion, then we can hold the pain in this big view, in this no form view, while taking care of the form right here. So if someone is suffering, they're really suffering, and you, your heart is empathizing with them, and then you have a big view. You're able to be in that pivot place. Doesn't mean that you have to tell them, oh, really, your pain is nothing. It's just a big, no, you just come from that. And then you're able to say something, or you're able to be with them in a way that's helpful, both to you and to them. So I want to give an example of that from Tara's book, The Story of Mitch. And I tell this story because I think a lot of people may resonate with it. So Mitch's story is he was a member of the meditation community that Tara was a part of. And for him, the most difficult part, his father had Alzheimer's. And he said the difficult part, Alzheimer's was difficult, but the most difficult part was his mother's suffering with what was going on with his father. And he told Tara, it's like ongoing and countless deaths. And as it happens, Mitch was the only one of his siblings who lived nearby. So it fell to him to visit his parents regularly, which at first it was fine, but as his father got more and more confused, Mitch found that he began to dread the obligatory time in their small condo. And he said sometimes his mother's loneliness and despair would just flood him and he'd feel overwhelmed. So he was feeling a lot of empathy, but it was leaving him feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, and helpless. And also, he said, just as often, especially at the times when he was stressed or busy, he'd feel robotic and cold and distant. So he couldn't actually then even access the empathy. He just had to go through the motions. And either way, whether he was feeling overwhelmed with empathy or feeling completely withdrawn, he was filled with guilt about not really showing up. And so then he started working with the RAIN practice and bringing that to his painful mix of feelings. And at first, it still didn't seem to be helping. He said, I feel like I'm being dragged into a bottomless pit and I don't want to be there. But then more and more, he was focusing on recognizing and allowing his own empathetic distress, how he was feeling his mother's feelings, as well as his own reactivity of overwhelm and withdrawal. He took his time, mindfully naming the emotions, fear, grief, guilt, hopelessness, and with each allowing it to be there. And then this mindfulness also allowed him to deepen into investigation, discovering how his sense of failure appeared in his body, feeling the squeezing in his chest or the twisting in his belly. And observing this, he began nurture by whispering, "It's okay, breathe, relax." And then he remembered a recent visit that was particularly upsetting. His mom had yelled at his dad for walking outside in his pajamas and then crumbled into tears of remorse. He was ashamed at the helplessness he felt and how he hated being there. But again, he sent the message, "It's okay, breathe, relax." And he repeated it several times. And then a deep clutching inside him loosened and some space opened up. And what followed was an image of himself hugging his mom as she was weeping. He was holding her in tenderness, and after some moments, this loving space included his father too. And he told Tara later, "After all these months of being so upset about their situation, I had some moments of simply caring about them. It was the first time, just caring." So, and even though that experience was in his mind, so he was the image of hugging his mother, the image of including his father, I'm sure that when he next visited them, the quality of his response and his presence was different. You know, of course, he still might have gotten swept into it because those patterns are there. But now he had this other way of being to remember the large space that was there and to be able to respond from that space. So next is very similar, your thought being the thought of no thought. Your singing and dancing is none other than the voice of the Dharma. So if it's hard for us to think about our form being made up of all these elements that are not me, but maybe we can kind of think about that, because we can say, oh yeah, my parents' DNA, what I had for breakfast, what someone said to me. Okay, maybe I kind of get that. So son, I'll go along with you. But now you're telling me that my thoughts are not my own. Wait a minute. I don't believe that. I have a thought about that. But the teaching in the Diamond Sutra is even our thoughts are fluid. They're not stuck in one place. And even this thought that I have now, like the thought that maybe you wouldn't believe me, that's made up of many things that went into having that thought arise. But when we realize that our thoughts are made up of the non-thought elements, when we see that fluidity even of our thoughts, then we're really released. Then we're free. Then we can sing and dance. And that singing and dancing expresses the Dharma. So the singing and dancing here is a metaphor, but also I think it's pointing to something really important, which is when we're free, that freedom actually manifests and gets expressed in our body. So through, you know, talking is one thing, but singing is more expansive and free, or chanting. And walking is great, moving is great, but when one is dancing, that's another level of freedom of movement. I'm having this memory of a coworker of mine back long ago when I worked in mental health, and she would, her name was Samantha, and just every once in a while, out of nowhere, she would just burst into song. She'd be walking down the hall wherever, and she'd just burst into song. Be some line or, you know, a few lines of a song. And she wasn't a Zen practitioner, but I feel like she was really the voice of the Dharma. Because in that moment, her expression, for anyone who was ready to receive it and listen, was freeing. It was a bodhisattva. And usually, you know, a lot of us are like, we've been conditioned, you know, like, don't make too much noise, don't like be out of control. And so we're hesitant to like just burst into song out of nowhere. And then in Zen practice, you know, not only do we not burst into song, but like in Sesshin, we're not even supposed to talk. So then, you know, it can be seem very shut down, but that's really not the practice. So like inside in Sesshin, we should actually be singing all the time. And then when Sesshin is over, we can sing. And when we do the chanting, we can chant. And in the pandemic, we're putting the masks on when we chant because it's, you know, it's spewing. And we want to try to protect each other. Also about dancing, I feel like I want to put in a plug for Don't You Feel It Too, which is a beautiful expression of freedom in movement. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, sometimes we have a certain idea of what dancing is, but having participated in some of the Don't You Feel It Too activities, you know, dancing could just be a slow movement of the arm. You know, but with freedom, I mean, just with, and feeling it in your body. And they're very, that group is very non-judgmental and encouraging and welcoming. And so you're dancing, if you're feeling shut down, your dancing might just be standing in one place and swaying back and forth as you get in touch with your body, and that's okay too. Or even just sitting there and feeling your body.
So that first session with them, like the first 3 periods, I danced sitting at first.
So did everyone hear me, Ocean, or should I repeat that? So she said, we've done a couple sessions now, joint sessions with Don't You Feel It Too, and Myoshin said the first one that we did, her dance was just sitting. She just sat
at first and
felt in her body what was going on, and then was able to move later after taking the time to feel that. The other thing that happens with these activities is that, you know, so it says your thought being the thought of no thought, your singing and dancing is none other than the voice of the Dharma. So you might read that and think, okay, well, when I reach the point where my thought is the thought of no thought, then I can sing and dance and have it be the voice of the Dharma, but not before. And really, if we go back to the cause and effect arising together and being one, and also what we know about how the body and mind work, if we put ourselves in a posture of freedom, like let's try out what it's like to move, to open my arms, and let's try out what it's like to just have my voice go out. Even if I don't feel free, let me try to be in the posture of freedom and then see what happens. And actually, it can shift something and help us. So that's why I think, especially for Zen practitioners, when we spend a lot of time sitting still, we should have a practice where we're moving in order to remember, you know, to really bring it into our body. And then when we sit back down, we can be more in touch with our bodies as well, like what's going on emotionally, internally, because we've expressed it by moving. And by the way, I'm pretty sure Don't You Feel It Too is doing some in-person things outside, you know, with physical distance. So you can look them up. And I'm sure we'll be doing another joint session with them in February, but it might be over Zoom. But still, you can still move then. You're moving at home. So this singing and dancing being the voice of the Dharma is another way of to say that we're saying yes to what's here. So this is again a teaching from Tara. Saying yes to what's here and not getting stuck in our thought about it. So I'd like to read a teaching from her on that. And this is she calls it remembrance. Say yes to what's here. So this is kind of a reflection. So I'll just read this, and if you want to close your eyes and just do it as a reflection, you can do that. While we need to open to our deep fears and losses, we can develop our resilience and confidence if we first practice saying yes to moderate discomfort and unpleasantness. So this is like in Zazen, a lot of times we practice like this. You might try saying yes when you have indigestion or a headache, when you're anxious about being late or annoyed that the car was left close to empty, or disappointed at missing a dear one's wedding. Keep in mind that your yes is directed toward your own inner experience, not toward what someone else is doing. So it doesn't mean you're agreeing with someone causing you pain or doing something that you would say is not helpful, but you're saying yes to your experience of that. You're meeting your edge and allowing any sense of emotional reactivity or inner conflict to soften. So she says, here's some ways to begin that. Whispering yes inwardly, or saying it softly out loud, or alternating yes with it's okay, I consent, this belongs, or any other word or phrase that conveys acceptance. You might imagine sending the message of yes directly to the inner place of vulnerability, upset, discomfort, or pain. You might make a gesture of bowing respectfully to the inner experience or visualize yourself bowing. You might meet the inner experience with a slight smile. Let this form at your lips and then try to feel the smile in your eyes and in your heart. So after doing this experience of yes, which you can do either when something comes up in Zazen or just something in your day-to-day life, taking a moment to pause and then ending by taking some moments to notice if there's any shift in your body, heart, or mind. So I noticed there's a couple people who just came on the call, and I'm really sorry. The schedule is different for Friday for our last day. So we actually started the talk at 9:30. So hopefully you'll be able to just jump right in. So we're talking about the last section of the Song of Zazen. So there's this line now that we've talked about, your form being the form of no form. Your going and returning takes place nowhere but where you are. Your thought being the thought of no thought. Your singing and dancing is none other than the voice of the Dharma. And then there's this just beautiful expression of singing in a way in the poem. How boundless and free is the sky of Samadhi. How refreshingly bright the full moon of wisdom. At this moment, what is there that you lack? So there's this beautiful opening to the luminous quality of life. And then there's the assumption in the question, at this moment, what is there that you lack? That the answer would be nothing. There's nothing. But sometimes we still feel like there's something lacking. And so we need to, we don't need to, but if we would like to, it's helpful to touch into the boundless and free sky of Samadhi and the refreshing, bright full moon of wisdom. And we can do this, Tara suggests, by recalling our goodness. So if we're having difficult times, we can recall our goodness. And she has some suggestions about how to do that. And these are very similar to the resource anchors that we talked about the other day. So she says, when we're caught in the trance of unworthiness, it can be hard to believe in our own goodness. So the suggestion is to bring yourself into presence in whatever way works best for you. And then try one or more of the following prompts. So you might recall someone, a person, a spiritual figure, a pet, for whom you can easily feel appreciation and love. And then sense the goodness of your care for this being. So calling to mind someone that you love, and then let that love arise, and then, in that moment, I'm a loving person. It's right there. You might recall a time when you were kind or generous. You might reflect on qualities you appreciate in yourself, such as your love of nature or adventurousness or sense of humor, curiosity, persistence. So I find there's this thing that happens with the qualities that we might have, that things that we're good at, with many people, myself included, is that I tend to say, well, that's easy for me, so it doesn't count. It's like very bizarre. Or because it's easy for me, I think it's easy for everyone, so then it doesn't count. And here it's like, okay, let's just put that aside, that idea that it doesn't count, and say it's here. So it is counting. I'm thinking of it and it's here. And if that's still hard, you might imagine yourself as a child and then recall any moment of playfulness or affection or wonder that stands out for you. Because that, even though you're a different person now, as we talked about, your form being the form of no form, there's still a thread that's making up the current you that relies on that moment of playfulness or affection or wonder from when you were a child. Another way to recall your goodness is bringing to mind someone who you trust, someone who appreciates and loves you, and then try to look at yourself through their eyes. So when I do loving kindness meditation, I'll often say if people have a hard time with the self-love part, that they can imagine a person that they trust their opinion of, you know, someone that loves them, that you're close to, and then imagine them saying the words to you, like, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you have ease of well-being. And it might be a little bit easier to take it in like that. So again, with this, it might be a little easier to take it in if it's someone who loves you and you imagine that, oh, they're seeing some goodness in me. It's not an accident that they are happy to be with me. And another way of tapping into your own goodness is imagining your future self, the self who expresses your deepest intention and potential, the self you're growing into. And this one's a little tricky because you don't want to do it like, I'm not good enough now, but more like, this is the possibility. And the seed of that possibility is here, and that seed is the goodness that's in me right now. And you can also help other people see goodness. So it's not just about for yourself, it's also for others. And Tara suggests three key questions that you could ask yourself when looking to see the goodness of another. So one is, what does this person care about? Another is, am I looking with fresh eyes? And then finally, what is the best way to let them know their goodness? And she tells this beautiful story about Logan, who was a young man who had attended a number of retreats with her. And he was someone who was constantly harsh with himself and filled with self-doubt. So during one of their meetings, Tara asked him if he could recall any recent moments of respite, times when he felt at home with himself. And he said, yes, there had been one day, the day before, and during a meditation, he had noticed an elderly woman who was sitting on a chair across the room. And he noticed her feet were dangling because they couldn't reach the floor, and this looked so uncomfortable that he got up and found a cushion to put under them. When he returned to his place, he'd become aware of a sense of inner warmth, connectedness, and peace. So Tara paused and said, "Logan, that was such a caring thing to do. I really get that kindness matters to you and that you live it." As they continued to talk, she told him she was confident he had a lot to offer others and that he had the makings of a fine meditation teacher. And before they ended, she thanked him for being so sweet to the older woman, who, as it happened, was her mother. Wow. And then later, Logan was able to do the same sort of thing for someone else when he was leading a teen retreat. And he noticed someone who was wrapped up in unrelenting self-criticism. And he asked her, "Can you remember a time when your mind was at ease?" And she told him about helping someone in their meditation group. And so then he reflected and mirrored that back to her and asked how she felt when she was doing that. And she said, "I felt like there was nothing wrong with me." So this is the touching into, there is nothing that you lack. For ourselves and helping others to see that as well when we have the opportunity. So the last couplet is, "Nirvana is right here before our eyes. Where you stand is the land of purity. Your person, the body of the Buddha." Or another translation has it, "Your very body, the body of the Buddha." So I want to say a little bit more about seeing goodness. This again from Tara. "Can you imagine moving through your day, appreciating the hearts and spirits of those you engage with? The beauty of the clouds, birds, grasses, and trees. Of course, you also include what's painful, perhaps your anger towards someone who's hurt you, or the suffering of a friend. Yet still, there's an awareness that remembers the goodness that animates our beings." And then she has this wonderful quote from Thomas Merton. "Life is this simple. We are living in a world that is absolutely transparent, and the divine is shining through it all the time. This is not just a nice story or a fable. It is true." I think that's a good place to end. And today, so this is our last day of Sesshin. We have a little bit of a break now. We'll come back at 11 and do sitting. Our schedule is sitting for 30 minutes. I think maybe we'll sit for 25 minutes and then do a little stretching. And then from 11:30 to 12:30 is our closing circle. So even if you haven't participated in all the Sesshin, you're welcome to attend the closing circle. And thank you so much for being here and doing this together. We'll do the closing chant.